My name is Christina Richardson. I am a second year MDiv student.
David Schultz, third year MDiv.
For me personally, I just always wanted to go to India. So like anything India, I was like, yes, I don't even care. I want to go to India. So my first thing was, I just want to go to India. I love Bollywood. I just want to go. But then as I got to know about the class, I kind of got more interested in how other people sense the sacred, not just Christianity, but also how Hindus sense the sacred, but also how Christians in India sense the sacred. Mm-hmm. Because I feel like as a Christian in India, your traditions all mix together with your faith. So it's kind of hard to separate the two. So someone who's a Christian in India would have a very different faith than someone in the U.S. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to go explore that and kind of get to see another world and kind of just see the beauty that I see online, but actually see in person when I went to India.
Yeah, I had never really thought about sensation and the senses as a really important religious category. I'd always been interested in comparative religion and studying some Indian religion. I guess I've had more exposure to Buddhism before. I've wanted to get like a firsthand encounter. And it seemed that once I was thinking about the senses and the way that religion is sensed, that we have religious training in the senses. I realized that it is like a really useful entry point into thinking about Indian religion and the differences between Indian and American or Westernized forms of Christianity.
Also, like exploring the senses, it's not something I really think about when it comes to my faith. So being focused on that kind of helped me reflect on my own faith and how I sense the sacred in my faith.
Yeah. Yeah, I was really struck by the diversity of the diversity in like the magnitude of sensation and how that plays a role in the religious life. I was really struck by the difference. Indian religion, you know, across the board was like more different than I was expecting. Yeah. It's more different. Yeah, so we flew into Chennai or Madras in southeast India. It's actually in the state of Tamil Nadu, which is where we spend most of our time. So we took a van to the capital city, Madurai, which has about 1.5 million people. It's about 7 hours of a drive in the early morning from the airport in Chennai. Yeah. And we stayed at a seminary there. And so we were there for maybe 6 days, and then we were taking some day trips. Then we went west, still in like really southern part of India, to Kerala, mm-hmm. the state of Kerala. Yeah. And we went to a couple of touristy towns there, as well as Kottayam, which is a larger city, some seminaries
went
there.
To Thekkady.
Thekkady. And then we went back to Madurai to the seminary for a few days, and then we went east, kind of making our way back to Chennai. We went to a Hindu-Christian monastery, and we went to Pondicherry. We were there for 2 nights, and then we went north to Chennai,
mm-hmm.
which we were there for an extra day because our flight got delayed by a day. So that's kind of in broad strokes where we were.
And then our focus was mostly sensing the sacred, looking at Christianity, looking at Hinduism through different temples and talking to different people at the seminary, also people who are running the temples. We went to a few plays and seen some like music performances and not a few plays, we saw like one play. And then we saw a dance and then a musical performance, and we also got to see a performance by the Dalit drummers, mm-hmm. which are
I think like the lowest of the Untouchables. The mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the caste system.
I guess people don't say Untouchables anymore.
Yeah.
But yeah, there was, yeah, that drumming performance. And we had read a book called, shoot, was it called Sensing the Sacred? No, it's not called
Taste
that.
Of the Divine.
Taste of the Divine. That goes through Rasa theory.
Theory also, yeah.
Yeah, right. So the theory of Rasa is like, it's like a kind of, it's an ancient, relatively old Indian aesthetic theory based off of like emotions, that emotions are kind of the gateway to the divine, to experiencing ultimate beauty, the sublime. And so in one of the dance performances we saw, that was really explicit, like the dancers made different facial expressions, and those were, sort of entryways into experiencing those emotions.
Yeah. Emotions like fury, love, peace, and emotions like that.
Mm-hmm.
Also, we're talking about the caste system, the Dalit. So India was once built on a caste system, not built, but like had a caste system where it was broken up to 5 categories, and they believe that Brahman kind of created humans, and there's people from his head.
Yeah.
His
shoulder.
And yeah, several other paid places, but the Dalits were outside of the caste system, so not even part of the caste. So that's why they were seen as the untouchables, and no one wanted to associate with them.
And although I think untouchability is now illegal, was sort of written out of their constitution when they gained independence, it's still sort of hardwired, baked into their culture, unsurprisingly. And so that poses all sorts of socioeconomic problems for them.
And we say untouchable is more like you can't eat from them, you can't kind of engage, get married, or even have conversation with them. It was kind of, back then at least, it was kind of against, like, if you were a higher rank, you wouldn't associate with anyone under you.
For me, it was definitely the Meenakshi Temple, which is the central temple complex in Madurai, the capital city.
Mm-hmm.
Madurai is called the City of Temples, and the temple there is, like, really gorgeous. So we went there a couple times. The first time we were there, we just walked around the temple complex and looked at, the tower, the temple gates, these massive towers that are really intricately designed. I was really impressed both times, so I guess I should just, like, I think the architecture, the number of individual, like, religious forms and characters that are on the walls, and especially on the temple towers and all of the colors, the experience of, like, being in the presence of that and seeing so many devout people streaming in, as well as the whole environment. There's merchants everywhere, people selling you stuff. It's sort of, like, hot and humid and just feels like, it was sort of, I guess, dreamlike in some way. Like, there was just, like, a multitude of sensation and the sense of, like, religious power that I was, like, kind of, I was really captivated by and struck by. And that was only heightened when we got to go into the temple, where there's just shrines everywhere, different shrines, some of which are not necessarily operational, or people weren't actively praying there or making offerings there, but they were clean. They were clean as well, so someone was taking care of them. I didn't know exactly, like, how it was organized. That seems like a kind of a weird thing to be struck by. But there was a central shrine, and people were lining up around the temple complex to go inside. But people were streaming sort of everywhere, going to different shrines. Just like the diversity of the shrines, the diversity of like the ways that people were accessing the divine is, like, really impressive. And the feeling that there was a center, but there was also, like, dislocation and, like, a spreading out of the divine power or something like that. it made me, it was fascinating, also like maybe unsettling in some kind of subtle way, where I'm used to religious buildings and religious sites having a kind of definite center that people are oriented toward. That's reflected in Hindu religion more broadly, with the multiplicity of cults or different access ways to the divine, different gods and goddesses that people make offerings to, and so on.
So I think one of the things that kind of took me by surprise was, I've watched a lot of Bollywood movies, and I didn't realize that there was more darker skinned people in India than I expected. So I assumed there would be like light skin, like the ones on movies. But when I went there, it was completely the opposite. They were more like my skin color. So when I went there, that took me by surprise. And I don't think I realized that I blended in so well. So I think I realized that I could be mistaken for someone that was from the area, was when the lady kind of questioned if I was from Madurai or not. And then the professor said, yeah, she's a foreigner. And then I kind of then looked around and realized how there's so many dark-skinned people like me. And I just thought, I was just, wow, that's so beautiful to be somewhere where I'm not sticking out of the crowd, or I'm just like, you can't spot me from afar, you know? So just being somewhere where there's just so many beautiful chocolate people. Yes. And I was just like, I like the word chocolate, you know? Anyways, but it was just so nice to be surrounded by people that kind of look like me. I know my hair is different, but it was still nice to just be able to kind of blend in, feel at home, and just have people who are able to kind of understand the skin color you have, and then how, on top of that, having an industry that kind of encourages you to bleach your skin. So even on the TV, watching the TV in India, there's a lot of mostly light-skinned people. You could barely see any dark-skinned people. So seeing the difference between what's being projected in media and the actual reality of the people there was kind of shocking, because I didn't realize it was the same way that's done here. So I came back home and I looked on TV, and it took several commercials before I saw someone that was dark-skinned. Mm-hmm. So I just realized how it's very similar. We're getting the same messages across the board. So someone that's in India is being told to be bleaching their skin as the same way. Well, not just bleaching their skin, but telling them that lighter skin is beauty. In the same way in the U.S., it says, kind of projecting lighter skin is beauty. And being somewhere where everyone around me looks the same as me was quite empowering. So that was just an empowering moment. And then it kind of helped me realize the privilege I have to be able to be in a country, to go from the U.S. and have the luxury to travel to another country. To go to another country and just be in a place where I'm taking to be, like, people were taking pictures of us, and like, we were getting special treatment, and then being somewhere where you're looked at as privileged, and then coming back, kind of realize that I do have more power and privilege than I think I do, even in the U.S., even though I'm told that I don't. So it's really empowering to go there and just be with people like me, and then that look like me, but also encourage me to like kind of drive my want to go to Africa and kind of visit the country my family's from. So my family's from Liberia, and go to visit and be in another place where I'm surrounded by not only people that look like me, but people that come from the same ancestry as me. So
yeah, I've been trying to kind of wrap my head around the experience a bit. Something I touched on talking about the temple complexes, all the shrines, and I feel like the concept of multiplicity or the multitude, that, so thinking about like diversity or multiplicity that isn't so neatly subordinated to an idea or a concept or like rationalization or a neat and clean logic, is something that, like, I think I found myself looking for organization and rationality and logic a lot of places in India. And I didn't, it's not that I've just found chaos, but I think that the way that things are organized there differently evades the ways that I normally think of things here. So even looking out over Chennai or Madras, like huge city, 6 million people, like I couldn't find an isolatable downtown area or a place where that was clearly the city center. There was development everywhere, looking over the horizon in ways that I was trying to figure out how are they building things. And even alongside the highway, there would be half-built structures or randomly big complexes that were somewhere along the way to construction or were complete, but I didn't know. So, I mean, that's kind of the case of, like, urban planning or construction. But, in religious life as well, there's all these different gods and goddesses. And, you know, people are, there's all sorts of different temples and religious stories and so on. And so thinking about, as well as just the sheer number of people and the density of population going out in the street, there's just people everywhere milling about doing stuff. I don't know, I'm kind of rambling, but I think that there's, I think Indians think of and like embody like different ways of, like live their lives according to different ways, like organize them differently. They organize their religious lives differently. The way they construct cities, the way that they inhabit space in cities. They're doing it differently in a way that, is like genuinely different. And so I feel like I'm leaving with the question, and I can't, and I don't feel like I have the powers, like, alone to, like, answer them right now, but I think that it's something I want to do a lot more research on.
One thing I love about India, how it's, like, everything was just, like, go with the flow, and, like, their sense of time is completely different. Like, if something happens, it's like, okay, we just kind of make arrangements and go with it, and I feel like in the U.S., we're just like, go, go, go. If we're late, then that's a problem. And I was just like, I fit in because I'm always late to everything. This is my place.
Yeah.
But anyways, it was a good experience. I loved India.
Yeah, it was great.
Definitely want to go back and, like, go to... But I want to explore, like, Mumbai and New Delhi and see, like, the northern areas.
Mm-hmm.
And just explore more and spend more time there. And have a chance to kind of interact with the people more. I feel like we're so scheduled and going from one place to another as a group and not able to, like, break off and just kind of be an individual and explore.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd love to do that. I think for me, it's, like, the poverty I saw over there and being kind of discouraged and not being able to help anyone and change the situation that people are in. And even the small donation I could make still didn't make much of a difference. But then one thing that I realized is that even if I can't change the world or I can't change a whole system, I can still help one person, and it makes a difference in that one person's world. And I kind of, coming to the U.S., is realizing that I do have a lot of privilege and power, and I need to use the one I have, the power and privilege that I have, to help others. Some way, some form, even if it's small, that I need to do something instead of not doing anything. And not kind of just be like, oh, I can't help the world, I can't change the world, but just helping one person, I think it makes a whole lot of difference, at least for that one person's world. So I think I have to figure out a way to how I can take these stories I've heard, and trips I've been on in India and previously, to kind of figure out a way I can help people, not only in other countries, but also in the U.S., just kind of doing something, not just sitting, not just taking the story and taking the experience and say, awesome, I went to India and that's it. But, like, doing something that I can help at least one person.
People in South India at least have this mannerism where they're, it's not really instead of a nod. It's a way of showing that they're okay with something, that they're
agreeing with something.
Yeah, like, sort of agreeing, like, so they do this little like
yeah.
They, like, yeah, sort of, like, bobble their head.
Yeah.
I learned that. That was good.
I think one thing I've, like, learned was how massive India was. Like, I didn't realize how big it was until I saw my, not I didn't see myself, but, like, kind of put myself on a map of India and then looked at everything else and realizing how small of the areas we, like, explored and looked at. Like, it's huge. Mm-hmm. I didn't realize. And there's so many people everywhere. Best experience ever was when we took a rickshaw and we went to the
Meenakshi Temple.
And it was the most craziest thing because it's like this, there's no sense of the divided line. So everyone's like, you either drive on the right, you drive on the left, and you're just like weaving in lanes, and it's wicked. But anyways, that was quite a great experience.
Yeah, I think that the size of India, as well as, I mean, I've been talking about multiplicity and diversity, but even the two states we went to, which are touching, I mean, they're adjacent, Kerala and Tamil Nadu, they speak different languages there. I mean, they speak Tamil and Tamil Nadu, and they speak, like, Mahalapalam or something. That's what I've been saying, but I actually can't remember. They speak a different language in Kerala. And it has much different geography. And then they speak Hindi in the north, mostly. Yeah. And English is like a state, is like the state, is a state language there as well. Although, we didn't encounter that many. I felt like a lot of people didn't speak English. I thought more people would speak English.
Or like, they spoke some English, but like.
Yeah. Not. I mean, yeah. I don't know.
And then also, like, people were so kind and nice. I felt like they were just so welcoming and loving.
We took a boat ride on, it wasn't quite the ocean, but it was like backwaters of the ocean.
Nice.
Yeah, I actually don't know if there's much of a story here other than that. It was like,
you took a boathouse.
It was actually like the most fun thing that we did to me. Yeah. Like we were.
Rode an elephant too.
I'm like, didn't you?
Oh, yeah, we rode an elephant.
Yeah, we rode an elephant.
Yeah, I just totally forgot about that experience. We went to a spice garden.
Yeah.
Is there any? Yeah, we had a lot of inside jokes as happens when people are together for 2 weeks.
Yeah. A lot of bonding.
Yeah.
Got to see each other's laundry, you know, sprawled out.
Oh, yeah, the laundry was interesting.
Quite interesting.
Yeah, we got to do laundry a couple times and we just sort of all piled it on this table and then. The guy would come back that evening or the next morning and have this, like, cube of clothes that were all
ironed,
like, neatly pressed and, like, in, like, a Tetris pattern, like, all over the place.
Yeah, it's just, like, really impressive.
But, like, it was all mixed up, so everyone's laundry was there, which was, like, okay, whose are these?
Yeah, exactly. You have never seen someone move so quick when their underwear is on the stage table. You're just like, yes, that's mine. Sorry.
No, that's good. Great. You get the sound effect there. Yeah. Wonderful. Yeah. Awesome. Would you recommend like that travel seminar to other people who may be thinking of going?
Yes. Do it. It's amazing.
Do it. Yeah,
it's
yeah.
So amazing. I don't know, like, I keep telling people, like, that's a trip I would never forget. Mm-hmm. There's so much, like, the experience you have is just, you can't really put it in, like, a nice word. It's, like, a lot of feelings and things you see, but it was great, so I would say yes.
And having the connection to the seminary there, you get to talk to a lot of professors there and a lot of different religious voices, and you get exposure to things that I wouldn't even know to seek out or wouldn't, I would be totally unaware of, even if I talked to a tourist or a travel agent or, you know, went to some travel site or something. Yeah. So, it really is a unique experience, and being able to do it in, like, with, like, a theological cohort is, it's kind of one of a kind experience.
Awesome.
Yeah.
What are the kind of questions you hope that people ask you about your experience?
I feel like the number one I do get is, like, the clothes. How's the clothes? What you bring? And it's like, I got, like, two outfits. I got some cloth. But no one has really asked about, like, the poverty that's there. I think I feel like people just mostly see India as, like, the tourist area and stuff like that, but not really, like, inside where people are living. Mm-hmm. I think that's something that gets passed over.
Yeah, I guess I want people to ask me what was troubling or or confusing or in some sense that's kind of what I've been thinking about and obsessing over since we got back, is like the things that didn't fit and the things that posed questions for me.